All right, still John, still compulsive eater, second session on Sunday. Thank you. Hello. I'm going to read a couple. We have a few last Ask It Basket things, so I'll read them out. After 20 years in OA and several relapses, I am getting close to goal weight. What is your suggestion for the number one thing I can do to avoid another relapse? Well, whatever you're doing now, keep doing it for one thing. You know, I always, one of the lines I always heard is, addicts are the only ones who go, wow, I found something that works. Let me change it. You know, and you know, the other thing, you know, there's a line, for anybody who's a history nut, there's a line from, the American Revolution that said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Well, I think the price of abstinence is eternal vigilance. To realize, again, like I was mentioning yesterday, my disease will back up to try and find a way in, and it may not be this screaming about going to eat, but it'll try and get you to deviate the course just enough so where somewhere down the way, you know, you will find yourself out again. And the best thing is to really say, hey, this is working. Maybe I need to not change it. If you do want to change something in the food plan, really talk about it with a sponsor. Carl, my old sponsor, we would talk about when I was really working the food plan thing with him was, if you want to change your food plan, we'll talk about it, and then if we change it, you can't change it for at least 30 days. You can't be willy-nilly coming to me every week saying, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to take this on, I want to put, you know, and I think that's sort of an important thing. But again, you know, I look at those people I have admiration for in OA down in LA, and they're old-timers, and they're pretty much doing the same damn thing they were doing the day they came in, and it works. Why would you want to fix it, you know? Will the recording be an LA podcast? If so, how long before it'll be available? It won't be an LA podcast because it's your inner group. We're going to get it to your inner group and make it available as a CD. If you want, I don't want to take any usurp anybody's things. I was thinking of putting it up on my website because I had another retreat. I think I'd probably put a link to your thing on my website, but what I can temporarily do is put the links to the different things on my website so that you guys can go on and just say save as and then grab them and listen to them. Is everybody okay with that? I don't want to usurp the inner group's thing on that. Okay, and so... yes.
Can you give us your website?
Okay, well, I'm not supposed to say that from here, but I'm, since we're doing this, foodrelapse.com, really easy to remember. one word, foodrelapse.com. And take a look, like event recordings. I'll probably put it up there, but I might at some point, you know, if you guys get it on yours, just put a link on there. Because it is your, well, I mean, it's your thing, so I don't want to do anything about that. But no, it won't be on the LA one because, you know, again, the LA just tends to put their stuff up there. When you say to tell your new sponsee to focus entirely on putting down the food, does that mean by working the steps and using the tools or? In the beginning, no. Working the tools to hold on to it, but really about making that a major focus because my disease wants to start throwing a lot of chatter in my head. And yes, all these things, steps, you've heard me a whole weekend, steps are the most important thing. But if you start working on the steps while you're eating, I remember this is a true story. You know, Mr. Intellectual, the one guy I really identified with and when I first came to AA, he was another one of these intellectuals. And in fact, he would sit there. I'd walk in and he'd be reading. I remember I walked in one day, looked over, and he's got a book and it's in Russian. You know, and I can just read enough of the Cyrillic alphabet to go, oh, it's Dr. Zhivago. You know, and but he was this real intellectual, and he talked about because he was so intellectual and he was so good with book read. He was sitting there before he came to program, had gotten a copy of the Big Book and was reading the Big Book while he was drinking his cocktail. You know. And so anyway, the point being that the answer is still first things first. And I'm not saying to not do that, but to make sure that is your number one priority for a decent amount of time until it's really got its own momentum. And even then, again, eternal vigilance to make sure it stays that way. And don't, make that the first priority or else everything else is going to be useless. When you do your quiet time in the morning, what is the focus on in meditation? It tends to be mostly, you know, how is my day going to go? What's going to go on? I also think about, are there things that are either bothering me or things that you know, some kind of character defect that I realize is sort of, you know, cropped up in my life that I've got to try and work on, and then how do I handle that? I mean, I can pray to have it removed, but then I also feel, again, I tend to be sort of very practical about, yes, I believe my higher power is there for me, but I got to do my part, you know? I got to, you know, that great picture on the Sistine Chapel, you know, God is reaching out, but Adam's reaching out too, right? I mean, I've got to do my part. Again, like I said, God will do for us what we can't do for ourselves, but God won't do for me what I can do for myself. So that is that. The 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters, where, you know, and then also practice these principles in all our affairs. I always joke, I said, this. Let's be honest, this is two steps that they jam together, right? Except, you know, would you want to go to a 13th step program, right? It's so much about superstition. So, you know, let me talk about the first part, first of all, I was told a long time ago, old-timer Doris down in our neck of the woods, she used to say the most misread word in the 12 steps is there. It is as the result of the steps, not a result. And I was talking to somebody about that one day who really emphasized that, and he goes, you know, it's not just nitpicky English there. It's about the concept that the main result is a spiritual awakening from which all other things will flow, you know, not just, oh, a spiritual awakening in the middle of all these other things, which I always thought was a good point. You know, and mainly I think in the beginning of this step, it's about getting out of ourselves, you know, thinking of somebody other than ourselves and carrying the message. And how do you do that? You do that with service, you know. It really helps me to get out of myself, especially if I'm having trouble. You know, there's this old saying, trust God, you know, clean house, help another out, well, help another person, you know. And people ask, why do I do that? And I'll tell you, I do it for the exact same reason that Dr. Bob did it. And it's on page 181 of Dr. Bob's Nightmare. He said, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I had learned to others who want it and need it badly. And I do it for four reasons. One, a sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took the time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. You know, and I'm like, amen on that, you know. I mean, I think this is a gift, you know, and I think this is the one gift you don't have to feel guilty about re-gifting, you know. you know, and part of that is I think all the people that were doing service when I came in, the guy, you know, again, I'm an old fart, and when I came in, there was a guy named Dale in Connecticut who had kept an answering machine in his garage that had a list of the meetings on it, you know, and if he hadn't have been there, how would I have found a way? You know, I mean, some people happen upon it in the white pages of the telephone book, but most people find an intergroup, you know, or an intergroup website and find out how to get the meetings, you know. And, you know, I always say also, I am so thankful I am living today. You know, if I was living 100 years ago, I was dead 20 years ago, if not more, you know, because there was no AA, there was no OA. And so, you know, I want to do my part to keep it going, you know. That, you know, there's that movie a number of years ago called Pay It Forward, you know. And I remember when I saw that and they were reading it and, you know, the stuff about it, I said, this is a concept that is new for people. We've been doing this in AA for as long as I can remember, you know. When I first came to AA, I'm 300 pounds and I was driving a moped, okay, because I couldn't be bothered having a car anymore. I needed my money for drinking. So 300 pounds on a moped. I called it cruelty to motor vehicles. Well, guess what? After about a month or two in program, I killed the moped, right? And I didn't have a way to go to my meetings. Most of them were at this AA clubhouse I was talking about. And people gave me rides all the time. Not only did they give me rides from the meeting, at the, you know, because a lot of meetings will say, does anybody need a ride in my area anyway? But they would come pick me up and bring me to meetings. And I remember talking to the guy. I said, oh, I don't know how to thank you. He says, you don't thank me. You give somebody else a ride. And, you know, if I'm in a meeting and they say, does anybody need a ride? And it happens to be, you know, even if it isn't in my way, if nobody else raises their hand, I'll say, I'll grab you because that's what people did for me, you know. And, you know, one of the other things, and it's, I got to tell you, it's a little depressing, and I don't mean to be critical, but I'm, you know, I watch it like pulling teeth in OA to get people to do service sometimes. Yeah. And the people I see in my neck of the woods, are the people who've got 10, 15, 20 years. You know, it's like if I want what they have, I got to do what they do and do service, because that's one of the things that helps. You know, who knows? And I've heard this story over and over. I was having a bad time. I almost went out. But you know what? I had the big books for the big book meeting, and I had to get to the meeting, and it saved my butt. And, you know, that's not a good reason to stay abstinent. But if it's the last thread that holds you to the meeting, then that's a good thing, you know. And like I said, it's a little depressing sometimes, because I don't go to this meeting anymore because I'm married now, but I used to go to this Saturday night meeting, and every 6 months, and this is an AA, every 6 months they would say, okay, we're service positions coming up, see you at the end of the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, there would be a line of people waiting to go take a service position. And in no way, you know, you may get a secretary, you know, sometimes you get another thing, but it's like pulling teeth, and it's like, well, how is this going to be around? There is no servant class in OA. You know, there are no paid anybodies other than, like, we have a person for our office part-time, but that's, you know, it's in the eighth tradition about that, you know? But if...
You just looked around the room, and you're preaching to the choir.
Okay, good. But the other place where there's the change of service is sponsorship. You know, World Service, I don't know how much, actually Margie may know how much money we spend on you know, PI and getting the word out there and making commercials. But if those people come in and then they say, well, all sponsors raise their hand, and there's, you know, it's a thing, a room of 40 people, and one person raises their hand, how good is, you know, you can only do so much. And if people don't do this, this fellowship will die. If people don't do this service, their fellowship will die, you know? And that's the one place in sponsorship that I have the hardest time getting sponsees, you know? And I mentioned that yesterday, you know, oh my God, there's going to be, you know, I'm going to hurt them. I said, we need sponsors, especially men. I also tell my male sponsees, you sponsor men. It's an AA thing. But you know another reason to sponsor men? Because some men want a male sponsor. And if you're a male sponsor and all of your sponsor slots are given out to women, then that guy doesn't have a male sponsor. So I'm a big believer in that. But I'm only saying that to one guy who I'm sure is doing that already. and in terms of me being a sponsor, I'm just going to say, you know, there are no third tradition. There are no requirements other than being, a desire to stop eating compulsively. But there are... pant load of requirements if you want me to be your sponsor. Not really, but one of them is you will have at least one service position a week and one non-BS service position. Like, you know, and by that I mean, you know, there's some meetings I have 10 greeters, you know. I say, I want you to, something that will be make you be at that meeting every week. Now, the reality is, I think that's one of the reasons I have trouble getting volunteers is some people, oh, I don't want to commit to 6 months of having it. And I go, you know, there are co. You can have a co and you can get people to cover for you. You know, I was actually, I didn't do secretary I didn't volunteer at Serenity Sunday because I have so many commitments from now until the end of the year. But, you know, even last, I was secretary at Serenity Sunday until the end of June, and there were a couple of times I had retreats, and you know what? I can find somebody to cover me, you know? I don't have to say, oh, if I do this, I've got to be at that meeting every week, you know? So that's about with sponsoring, you know. I want to take a second to talk about the 12th step within. You know, 12th step within means helping people who are having problems in the program, you know. When I was going through my slip and I was gaining 50 pounds in front of everybody's eyes, nobody came up to me and talked to me about it. Not one person. And if, you know.
I'd really like to underline that. Been a thing. I think it's very hard for us to talk to each other, but we're very good at sizing up size. I mean, our eyes are been trained to do that.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We do know. Usually we can tell if somebody's gaining or they haven't lost for a long time.
Right.
And it's very difficult to know because, of course, we have a big message about not hurting each other. Of course, we don't want to hurt each other.
Right.
And at the same time, we also know that the sensitivity to our body's image. But we need help.
Right.
We're best to get it from people that understand it.
Right.
I just think if we could talk about how to do it it could help.
Right.
Even if I had a phrase or two. I've found a couple phrases to use with people who are not in OA. One I found is, you know, I go to this meeting because I really have a problem with my weight. Do you think you might be interested in a meeting like that? I can get you information. And I've tried that on people, and often it's helpful to them. But I have no clue about what to say to somebody in program.
Right. Yeah, who's going through that?
Especially when they say they're abstinent. I just, it stops me cold, and I don't know what to say about it.
Well,
we have to figure out.
Right, and we do. Well, first of all, I think for most of us, there is so much shame about our weights. And the idea of going up to somebody, we project onto them, oh, we're going to be shaming them. But if we believe, truly believe, this is a disease, it isn't about wanting to shame them. It's about wanting to help them, you know? If you think about having a friend, like one of your really good friends, and you're talking to her, and after you're done talking, she turns around and walk away, and you see this really nasty mole on the back of her neck in a place that she could never, ever, ever see it. And you think, geez, that could be skin cancer. Would you just let it go and say, you know, would you go up and say, hey, you know, you might want to check. You've got a mole on the back of your neck, and it could be something serious. Well, in a lot of ways, that's what we have here. And again, I think it has to come down to, you know, finding a way to say things in a nice way. And yeah, I've seen the same kind of thing with people that are significantly overweight. And I'll just say, you know, OA's definition of abstinence is being at or moving toward a healthy body weight. You know, do you think you fall into that parameter? Is there anything I can do to help? You know, because I can tell you, if I'm at my men's meeting and a guy comes up to me and says, you know, or just talks and I smell booze on his breath, he's going to get confronted in a gentle way. Gee, I can't help but smell booze on your breath. Is there anything I can do to help here? You know. And if you think about it, the weight is the booze on our breath, right? You know, the food version of it. And then the other thing about 12-step within I'll do, and I think I mentioned it with Murray, is, again, people never go, I'm leaving program, and just all of a sudden you turn around one day and, gee, where's Julie? I haven't seen Julie for a couple of weeks. And be willing to pick up a phone and just say, hey, you know, you haven't seen me around. And sometimes it's, oh, I've been on vacation, I've had this or that. But sometimes, I don't know, I'm sort of struggling. What, do you want to talk? You want me to come over? You want to do something? You know, maybe we can go out for coffee and I can take you to a meeting. That's the other thing. Okay, the little 12-step thing, if you get somebody who's new to program, take them to a meeting. Don't meet them at a meeting. Because you know what meeting at a meeting does? Boom, I'm out at halftime. You know, if you take them to a meeting, they're stuck the whole meeting. You know. Yeah, in terms and again, in terms of 12-step things for the outside, I believe number one thing for me is being at a healthy body weight. Because if I want to talk about OA, it's hard. We were talking about this at the break. One of the controversial things that the LA Intergroup did was they voted that for health fairs and things where we're going to be out among the public, only people at a healthy body weight can be in our booth. And that was very controversial because, again, it's not. And what it came down to is we said, look, this is just the serenity prayer on the hoof. This is a situation we cannot change how people out there view of people who are overweight. And a person could be 300 pounds in that booth that was 400 pounds last year and 500 pounds the year before and be a wonderful testimony to OA. But the people walking by who never stop at that booth, they're going to look over and see a 400-pound guy and say, that OA doesn't work. And so it was sort of a tough thing to have to say that, but that's part of the 12th step is to be an example as much as anything else. I'll give you my thing. This is a place that you and I are going to sort of disagree. I think a very gentle hand when it comes to OA from the outside, unless solicited, can make people go, what, you think I'm fat? Or, you know, or in some way put a guard up, you know? And one of the things I've always said is it's you have to handle this just so carefully because you could pollute the waters forever for them, whereas they may be able to find a way later. There's a very famous television actor that I'm sure you guys know who was on a series who started having all kinds of problems with alcohol, and his two producers, who happened to both be in program, tried to get him into AA and twisted his arm, and it backfired. Not only did he not come into AA, he went on TV and badmouthed AA all over the place, you know. And we'll probably never find AA now. And I hope, you know, pray to God he can not die. But I have to be so careful about how to say that. Now I'll tell you what my technique is. I call it fly fishing for new customers, you know, and what I do is I'll just find, if I happen to have somebody there who's overweight, significantly overweight, I'll find a way to slip in, wow, you didn't know me when I was 100 pounds more than I am now, and just leave it at that. Now, I can tell you, when I was that weight, ooh, I want to know, what's the secret? Do you have the magic pill? They will. Now, if they don't, chances are the wall's up and they don't want to talk about it anyway, and I can't help them. I can pray for them, but I have to know that. And again, when I was new in Oprah, I would let everybody know, oh, yes, I'm in Overeaters Anonymous, and I don't do that anymore. I tend to just sort of do my thing, and if somebody wants to know, I'm more than willing. I am not the slightest bit bashful about it. I am not anonymous when it comes to any of that. I'm not anonymous in a lot of ways, except in press, radio, films, and television. And that's the one place that we have to do that. And when I've heard people say, mishear that and say, well, I don't care. I go on TV and tell people I'm an overeater. No, that's not your choice. It's not your choice because it could backfire. Famous story from years ago of a guy named Art Carney, who was an actor. He was on The Honeymooners, and he had a real drinking problem, came in to AA, and then went everywhere and told everybody how wonderful AA was, and then had a very well-publicized slip. And think about what that did to the name of AA. Well, how good is it this guy's drunk? You know, so that's one of the reasons we don't do that. Now, one of the things I see, and I roll my eyes, is, and I'll tell you, I have a public website with my name on it, and I even have a book, but if you read that book, nowhere do I talk about being a member of that. And because there's enough different programs, you don't really know which one I'm in. I will talk about having heard, and I wrote as a whole prayer for us right in the beginning, saying, you may hear me talk about having heard something at an OA meeting, or you may have heard me say something about an AA meeting. People attend these meetings that are not in program. I'm not talking about what I'm in. But I was on a program, this guy actually I've been to meetings with, very famous A-list star who gets out there, and he gets out like a Larry King, and he'll say, well, I'm in a 12-step program for alcohol. Well, how many are there? You know, you might as well, at that point, you might as well just say it, you know, or just, you know, I don't know, that's just that's an opinion on that. But it's so important how you handle it. I mean, when I was first in AA, we got 12-step training. We did. We got 12-step training on how to handle a 12-step. We really don't have 12-step calls in OA very much, but 12-step call is let me just finish, is, you know, sometimes AA, you know, the LA Central Office will get a call, and we will go over and talk to the person. But what we do is we don't sit there and wag our fingers and say, here's what you got to do. We go over and we tell our story. The two things I was taught to do, tell your story, shut up. Let them talk, because I think that's part of it. Yeah.
I just remembered I did this one time, and that was, but I work in a 16-story building, and it's healthcare, and I've never seen so many, and it's 80% women, and they're, you know, it's just a hotbed for potential OA people. And again, but it's my workplace. I don't necessarily want to out myself. I don't want to become, you know what I mean, the spokesperson for OA, and so, but I was struggling with, okay, I'm in such a place, how do I 12 step? And I don't know, it was some intergroup thing or whatever, and I ended up on the OA, the World Services website, and saw that you could print out their public service posters, you know, like, you know, just 8x11, like, you know, public service. And so I printed out a whole bunch of those, and I was going to work on a Saturday anyway, and I just went around and taped them up in the women's bathroom, you know, totally terrified someone was going to find me. And, you know, eventually they got, you know, taken down. But actually then later I was at a Wednesday night meeting, and there was a woman in there who had one of those in her hand. And I was like, okay, that's it. That's all I... And, you know, it just... So dealing with the work thing, and I just wanted to share
that. No, thank you. I'm going to have to step this up because I realize we're running out of time. Yeah, like I said, I used to be real big about it. Now I sort of keep it to myself. And if you know anybody asks about something, I found the greatest line, if somebody starts nudging you about eating food you don't want, you just say, I'm allergic. I'm sorry, I'm allergic. And 90% of the time, their brain turns off. And if they push me and they say, well, what happens to me? I say, break out in fat, you know. But I tend, and then if somebody keeps pushing, I go, well, why is your food so important? And my food so important to you? And then they back right off. But I have people come up, well, I have a friend. Can you talk to him? No, I'm not going to talk to him. I can't really do it that way. And also, I'm going to say, if somebody's 400 pounds and happy, it's not my job to change them. You know, now I got to tell you, I don't think a person who's 400 pounds is happy deep down, but it's not my place to do that, you know. And in AA, I always heard the line, the person comes up, you got to help me. My husband keeps drinking. What should I do? I said, make him a drink. You know, he's going to make it or he's not. And maybe you need to go to a program because it's bothering you, you know. And that's the thing. It's the line I've always heard. It's not for those who want it. You know, it's not for those who need it. It's for those who do it, you know. And it's an important thing that we do talk about abstinence in terms of those things I talked about weight loss and things like that. I always say, OA is not T-ball. You don't get a trophy for just showing up, you know. You got to do other stuff. Other thing I want to talk, I'm going to try and run through this, is practicing these principles in all our affairs. I can go here and sit here and do a wonderful retreat, and then I go home and get on the highway, cut somebody off, give them the finger, go home, yell at my wife, kick the dog. You know, what is all of this about? It's about going back out and interacting with the people, you know, with people all over the world. I just want to tell this great story. I was telling it at lunch the other day. When I first started getting the OA podcast out, I sort of took control of the Light a Candle meeting for like 2 years because I wanted all those really good speakers up there. And the one guy I really wanted was this guy, Don. He actually was like the lunch speaker at our birthday party a while back. And he's wonderful program, real high-powered job, and yet he comes in and he's always doing service. And he says, oh, yeah, I'll speak. When is it? And I said, well, Light a Candle is 5:30 on Saturday nights. And he says, oh, I'm sorry, John. I have a promise to my wife that Saturday nights are hers. And I'm like, well, there you go. Practice these principles. What's he going to do? He's going to turn to his wife and go, screw you. I'm going to go tell people what a wonderful program I'm working. You know, it's about practicing those principles, you know. A lot of things have changed. I mean, for me, having grown up in an alcoholic household where the bastards was everything, I went through life for a long time in a defensive crouch. Well, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to live that way. And, you know, it means that maybe I'm going to be a little more trusting and maybe occasionally I'm going to be burned, you know. But I'd rather live like that than to live the way I used to, in that defensive crouch and everybody, I got to be careful of everything. And, you know, one of the things that happens when you do that, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know. You will end up generating stuff that way instead of just trying to be there. And, the other thing, I mean, one of the great things is being in L.A. is to see these wonderful examples, you know. They're real people. I was telling somebody, if you ever get a chance, listen to Seppi, S-E-P-P-Y, she's on there. She's got 30-something years, but she'll get up there and bust herself and talk about the things she screwed up today or last week. And such honesty about, guess what? We're working on it, but we're not angels. We're not saints. We try to be better, but, you know, that's all we can do. Because when I was over there, and I don't know if I said this weekend, but when I was in a program and I had a little bit of time, I used to, you know, remember that old commercial, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. Well, I was doing, I'm not an old timer, but I play one at meetings, you know, and I would try to be, you know, this person who gave off this air, you know. And I used to say I was the Sloganatron 2000, you know. You came over with the problem, well, have you prayed on it? Oh, read page 45 in the big book, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. And the reality is the people I admire are real. You know, but they're working a program, they're working the steps, but it's a matter of being real. And it's about continuing to work on yourself, you know. I used to joke, my poor first wife, she got John 1.0, you know. And then I dated a woman for a long time, she got John 2.0. You know, my wife today got John for 3.0. And, you know, 4.0 is in beta, that's why I'm here, you know. And, you know, I'll joke with my wife sometimes. I'll go, boy, you didn't want John Poino because he would have wanted to do that. You know, we go on vacation in those old days. I had to do 27,000 things or, you know, things like that. And And I'm much better about compassion now. The idea of having compassion for other people and forgiveness, you know. And realize that most people aren't doing hurtful things deliberately. They're doing because they're clueless. Or again, they were hurt themselves. And I love this line that somebody said once, forgiveness means giving up a hope for a better past. You know, and just saying, okay, this is the way things are. The other thing real quick, I'll touch base already on a lot, you know, is outside help. I'm not in real good touch with my feelings, and I did a lot of extra work that helped me get in a lot better touch. Because I grew up in a household where if I talked about how I was feeling about something, I'd say, that's stupid, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, you know what? My emotions are my emotions, and they could be stupid, but I've got to get them out to look at them, and then maybe I can override them. If I just try and gloss them over, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a wound that I don't clean out. And I took that for a while. Oh, I would try and intellectually override my emotions. And my emotions on any given day could be that of a five-year-old. And somebody may do something like, oh, that hurt me. And the adult me that came from program could look back at that little kid and say, okay, yeah, that hurt. Let's just think about it, though. Instead of saying, no, I feel fine. You know, that never works. And you know what fine means, and I'm not gonna repeat it. And to also, it helped me look back through time at some of those things. You know, that whole, if it's hysterical, it's historical, and you realize. The other thing, somebody brought it up, switching addictions. Boy, a lot of us have whack-a-mole. Boy, how many people have I watched come into OA? I mean, one of the jokes I do in my comedy act is I talk about Al-Anon, I call it OA's waiting room. You know, so many people end up sliding over. And AA sometimes too. I remember talking to this guy. He's come in and out about five times, and he's an AA guy who's like a circuit speaker, but he's 250 pounds. I told him the line this guy Kevin had that used to piss people off. Kevin was in both programs, and he said, if you're a recovering alcoholic but you're still eating and you're a compulsive eater too, you're not sober. Said, read what the big book says. Sobriety is soundness of mind. And is it sound of mind to be compulsively overeating when you know it's deliberately self-destructive? And I sort of think he was right, you know. And finally, I just want to talk about the gifts that my programs give me. I think it has multiple rewards, you know. When I first came in AA, we had a Connecticut meeting list that was, you know, about this thick. The AA one in LA is about three times as thick. But it had one of those, you know, just like most 12-step programs have some kind of 20 questions in it. And almost all of them seem really logical. Have you ever been arrested for drinking? Have you regretted something? But one of them said, do you start projects you never finish? And I was, yeah, I do. But I went over to my sponsor because I said, what does that have to do with drinking? And he said, you know, it's part of our alcoholic personality. We're impatient people, and we want instant gratification. Sometimes these bigger projects require a longer time with more patience, maybe learning to break up pieces and be able to see. You know, I never went back and got my degree after I got sober. You know, if I took one course a semester, I'd have five doctorates now, you know. So my wife has two, so I told her she's got to give me one of them. But what he said was, in addition, I says, John, if you keep coming, you're going to find out that there's so many more things this program's going to help you with other than just drinking. You're going to change your personality. And I look, and I thought about some of the time I spent in comedy where I was in program, but I really wasn't working the steps and think, God, I did a lot of really self-destructive things. You know, I wanted instant gratification of telling off somebody who could have gotten me on TV, you know, because he did something I didn't like. Well, I burned a bridge. I showed him, right? And to look at some of those things that if I change those, it will really help me in my life. Moderation in all things is another one of those ones. I have to look about moderation. I went up to talk to some guy one day who had like 20 sponsees. And I said, I don't think that's healthy. It's not good. You don't have enough time for the sponsees, and you're having no time to look at yourself. And he like disagreed with me, and he did the one thing I was afraid of. He left program. Now there's 20 people who needed a sponsor immediately, you know. And so, I mean, the whole idea of moderation, I think it's things we do. And then to also get out there, the recover to live. You know, we recover to live, don't live to recover. To spend all of our times in meetings, to take it out and to figure out, you know, how to do it. And, you know, all of this stuff comes down to, you know, the serenity prayer, you know, accepting the things we can't change, changing the things we can, and wisdom to know the difference, the hardest thing. And I think I mentioned it yesterday, the sponsor who used to say to me, it's all in the skin, right? Everything from the skin in, things I can change. And for the most part, it is that way, you know? Yeah, and the other thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to wrap it up, and then I think our last section will just pretty much do all shares, is I used to look around at the old-timers when I first came in. And, you know, I was a newcomer, and nothing was anything but drama, you know. And I see newcomers now in both programs, nothing but drama, drama, drama. And I would look at those old-timers, you know. Everything was bothering me. And these old-timers would just be the calmest, serenest people. And then they'd get up and share, you know, I got diagnosed with cancer, but, you know, it'll be what it'll be. Or, oh, my husband left me, but, you know, whatever. Or, you know, whatever, my dog died, I've had for 20 years. And they were calm and serene over things that were way worse than the stuff I was going through. And I remember saying to the sponsor, man, I want to be that way someday. I want to be, because I feel like life sometimes is like stormy seas. And I was this little dinghy, and I was getting bounced around like crazy. And I'd look over at those old timers, and they were like ocean liners, just going through the waves, you know. And I said, I want to be that way someday. And the thing is, I look now, and I'm pretty much that way, you know. But here's the difference. I see it from the inside looking out, not from the outside looking in. And what I mean by that is I realize today I am an ocean liner. But I'm an ocean liner made of mesh. I'm not going through the waves. The waves are going through me. You know, life's going through me. I'm not trying to push my way through life. And I think that's an important part of seeing, you know, seeing how to look at the world. Just try and go along and not spend your life trying to fight the world. So anyway, I'm going to stop now, and I think we have some stuff that's going to go on.